Today is our last message in the series on David's life. We've been talking about David for several months now. Seems like a couple of years for some of you maybe, but it's been a while. And today we're going to wrap up our series on David. And I thought it would be good for us in this last message on David to talk about the most well-known passage of scripture that he wrote, the 23rd Psalm. So let's just dive right into it. And there's a couple of verses in this psalm that I really want to zero in on. So let's jump in the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. A lot of people have found comfort and hope through the words of the 23rd Psalm at some point in their lives. It is probably the most well-known of all the Psalms, one of the most well-known and most quoted scriptures in the entire Bible. And yet what's interesting about this psalm is that it was written during one of the most difficult and painful times in David's life. You wouldn't know that just to look at it because he talks about things like lying down beside still waters and lush green pastures. He talks about God comforting him and providing him. He talks about God providing for him a table that's filled with great food and overflowing with wine. And he talks about all these wonderful things, but he also says, "You restore my soul," which means that something inside of him had been broken and needed restoration. When he talks about God's comfort, he says that that comfort comes to him in the valley of the shadow of death. And when he talks about this table that's covered with food, he says that is provided for me in the presence of enemies. In other words, the 23rd Psalm isn't just some flowery, poetic language. It's not just a bunch of nice-sounding platitudes about living a happy life and how to achieve this blissful, peaceful existence where there's no conflict. This psalm is all about the God who comforts us, the God who walks with us at every stage and every circumstance in our lives. Most scholars who have really studied the 23rd Psalm believe that David wrote this psalm not while he was a shepherd, but later on near the end of his life when his son Absalom had betrayed him and was trying to actively overthrow his kingdom. And so David had to run for his life and he was in hiding. And most scholars believe that's when David wrote these words. In other words, the 23rd Psalm was probably not written on a peaceful hillside while he was watching his sheep. It was also not written from the comfort and luxury of a king's castle. It was most likely written in a cave in the wilderness somewhere with a lot of people hunting him down, trying to end his life. And I'm sure in this circumstance, as his son was actively trying to end his life, actively trying to overthrow his kingdom, I'm sure David is grief-stricken and heartbroken and in fear for his life. And it was during one of the darkest times of his life that he penned the words, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Let's not just rush past those opening words. David says, "I shall not want." That should get our attention. How many people do you know who can say that? Who can say, "You know what? I don't want for anything. I am perfectly content. I don't feel like there's anything I'm missing out on. I don't feel like there's anything that God owes me or that life owes me or that somebody owes me that I don't have. I am happy with my life. I am perfectly content with what God has provided for me, and I don't feel like there is anything I lack." If anything, the spirit of our day is the opposite of that. We're always wanting more. We're always wanting something different. And I think the attitude and the approach to life for most people is probably better summed up in a different poem that goes like this. "It was spring, but it was summer I wanted, the warm days and the sunshine. Summer came, but it was fall that I wanted, the colorful leaves and the cool, dry air. Fall arrived, but it was winter I wanted, the beautiful snow and the joy of the holiday season. And then winter came, but it was spring I wanted, the warmth and the promise of new life. I was a child, but it was adulthood I wanted, the freedom and the respect of others. Then I turned 20, but it was 30 I wanted, the maturity and life experiences. I was middle-aged, but I wanted to be retired so I could spend more time doing what I wanted to do. And then I was retired, but it was middle age I wanted, the pursuit of a goal and a life filled with purpose. And then my life was over, and I never got what I wanted. I think it's a very sad view of life, but I think it's true for many people, that no matter what we have, no matter what we achieve, once we achieve what we think we want, then we want something different, we want something new. And there's this never-ending search for contentment, this never-ending search for satisfaction. So I think it's amazing that David wrote these words, "I shall not want." If you fast forward in the story that God is telling a few thousand years later, Paul writes these similar words in Philippians chapter 4. Starting in verse 11, he says, "I have learned how to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." Paul wrote those words while he was in prison. David wrote his words while he was in hiding. The reason David could say, "I shall not want," is because he first could say, "The Lord is my shepherd." And the reason Paul could say, "I've learned how to be content," is because he could also say, "Jesus is the one I am looking to for my contentment, for my satisfaction, for my strength, for my life." And what these two men show us is that true contentment and true joy and true peace and true satisfaction are not dependent on our circumstances. They depend on this question: who am I looking to in the middle of those circumstances? Who am I depending on when the circumstances of life become difficult and challenging? And David talks about that later on in the 23rd Psalm. Look what he says in verse 4. He says, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." Let's stop there. David says, "I am not fearful." Why? Because you are with me. And notice he doesn't say, I fear no evil because there's no evil here. I fear no evil because life is good and everything's wonderful. No, he says, "I am in the valley of the shadow of death." I don't know what that looks like, but that doesn't sound like fun. He's like, "I'm surrounded by evil. I'm in a valley, so there's no escape. I'm surrounded by bad stuff happening in my life right now." But even there, David says, "I am not fearful of evil." Why? Because you, O God, are with me. There are 365 times in the scriptures that we are given this command, "Do not fear." Most of the time we're given that command, it's accompanied by this promise, "I am with you." Over and over again, God says, "Don't fear." Why? Because I'm with you. "Don't be afraid." Why? Because I will be your God. I will guide you. I will walk with you through this. Here's just a couple examples. Isaiah 41:10. "Don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up with my victorious right hand." God says, "You don't need to be fearful, not because there's nothing bad happening. You don't need to be fearful because I'm with you. I will strengthen you. My hand is victorious, and I will guide you by my hand. I will walk with you through what you're going through, and I am your God." He says the similar things in Isaiah 43, just a couple chapters later, verses 2 and 3. "When you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you, for I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior." We are promised over and over again that God will be with us even in those difficult times. That when we go through those dark valleys, He's with us. That when we go through the deep waters, He's with us. That when we feel like we're being attacked on all sides, when it feels like life is heating up and we don't know what to do, His promise is, "I will be with you through all of it." Jesus, as He is about to ascend into heaven, He gathers his disciples together and he says, I want you to go and tell everybody about me. And it's going to be hard. And people are going to reject you and they're going to persecute you and you're going to oppose you. But you need to know this. As you go, I will be with you to the very end of the age. And again, we're reminded in Hebrews 13 that God promises he will never leave us and he will never abandon us. That is his promise over and over and over from cover to cover in the scriptures. Now, maybe you're here today and you're going through a dark time in your life. You need to know you're not alone in the middle of it, that God is walking with you through that dark time. But I also want to say this. You might be in a situation where you're going through a difficult time, but you're not sensing God's presence at all. And it just seems like he's abandoned you. And we talked about this just a couple weeks ago, too. Here, David is saying, God, I know that you're with me. I'm not fearful because you are with me in this valley that I'm in right now. And so I don't have any fear. But we talked a couple weeks ago about the fact that David also wrote some Psalms where he says, God, I don't know where you are. I'm in a dark time right now, and it seems like you've turned your back on me. It seems like you've abandoned me. If that's where you are, I want to encourage you to do exactly what David did when he had that experience. He went to God in honesty and said, God, I need you right now. And so if that's where you are, just go to him and just be honest and say, God, I need you to awaken me to your presence. Because I know in my heart of hearts, I know that you're here. I know that you haven't abandoned me, but my experience, it looks like you have. And I feel completely alone. So God, I just need you to renew within me an awareness that you are here with me. Give me your strength. Give me your courage. Give me reminders today of your presence. Go to him in honesty and ask him to do that, and he will. And so David says, I'm walking through this dark time in my life, but I am not fearful because you are with me. But then he also says that the shepherd has some weapons. He says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. What exactly is he talking about here? The rod was a short, heavy, thick stick, like a club. And the rod was not used for the sheep. A lot of Christians go through life terrified that God is up there in heaven, perpetually outraged, just waiting for us to mess up so he can smack us across the head. That's not the relationship we have with him. The rod that the shepherd carried around was used not for the sheep, but for the enemies of the sheep. It was used for predators. That when they would come against the sheep, they would take that club and smack them on the head and chase them away. If you remember way back earlier in the story, we're talking about David and Goliath. And David goes to King Saul and says, I will fight Goliath and God will give me victory. And Saul says to him, you're just a teenager. You're just a kid. This guy is a battle-hardened warrior. How are you going to defeat him? Remember what David said? God gave me victory over the bear. He gave me victory over the lion. And he gives more detail. He says, when they tried to take my sheep away, I went after them. I grabbed them and I clubbed them to death. That's what he's talking about. Shepherds carried a club. And David beat a lion and a bear to death with that club. See, our God has weapons on hand. And when we are attacked, when the enemy comes after us, he goes to war on our behalf. We're going to start talking about that next week. So he says, your rod and your staff, the second part, the staff, this was used for the sheep. Now, if you remember in the scriptures, we are compared to sheep quite often, and that's not a favorable comparison. Many times the sheep would wander away from the shepherd. Sound familiar? We do that too, don't we? And when they did, they got themselves in trouble. Sound familiar? We do too. When we wander away from him, we get tangled up, we get lost, we get messed up, we find ourselves in all kinds of problems, and this happened with sheep. Their wool would get tangled up in the briars, their legs would get tangled up in vines and branches. And so the shepherd would go and they would take that little staff and they would reach over and they would hook around the branches and pull them away and loose them, and then they would lift them out and bring them back to safety. David says, the fact that you have the staff, and when I wander away from you, you bring me back to yourself. You don't just let me go. You don't just leave me to fend for myself. You come after me and you're my rescuer, and I need that. And the staff also was sometimes used for discipline, but it wasn't as heavy and it wasn't going to inflict any damage on the sheep. from time to time when the sheep would start to wander off, if the shepherd could reach them, he would just reach over and just kind of tap them on the leg and just pop them and say, come on, you need to get back in line. Sometimes we need God to do that to us, don't we? When we find ourselves just beginning to head down the wrong path, sometimes we need God to just kind of pop us upside the head and say, okay, you need to straighten out. You need to get back where you need to be. And so David says, when I realize, God, how you protect me, that my enemies don't just have open access to me. They can't just come and take me. They can't just come and do whatever they want to me, because you are my shepherd and you are my protector. And when I realize that when I get out of line, you rescue me. When I get out of line, you pursue me. God, when I realize that you treat me like a shepherd treats his sheep, it comforts me. And so we need to know that God protects us with the rod, and he corrects us with the staff. And so when we go through that dark valley, we don't need to fear evil. Why? Because God is with me. He protects me and he corrects me, and I need both. David talks a little bit more about God's protection. In verse 5, he says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Talks about a table that's covered with food and a cup that's overflowing and having his head anointed with oil. He's talking about being revived and being refreshed. Where is this happening? In the presence of his enemies. Not in a place of safety, not in a place where everything is wonderful, but in the presence of his enemies. In other words, David tells us here that in the face of opposition and in the face of impending danger, God is there with us, and he still provides for us even in those times. And so for the one who trusts in the Lord as his shepherd, as her shepherd, not trusting in something else for our contentment, for our protection, for our provision, but when our trust is in him, our faith is in him, our dependence is on him, there's no need to fear the enemy. There's no need to fear the valley of the shadow of death. Why? Because God is there with us, and he protects us, and he corrects us, and he provides for us. I also want to look at a verse that I've never really paid much attention to. It's verse 6. The last part I've always liked. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The first part never really meant that much to me. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Okay, sounds like flowery, poetic language, whatever, let's move on. But then I thought, well, that's there for a reason. It's in there for a purpose. And so I did some digging, specifically on the word mercy. Some versions translate that word loving kindness. It comes from the Hebrew word chesed, and that word is translated 13 different ways. It's one word that is just rich with meaning. And I want to talk about just three of those meanings of that word that we have in our Bibles that says mercy. But let me first of all point out, David says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. So just to put this word in context, first of all, he says surely. In other words, David says, I have assurance that what I'm saying here is true. I have absolute confidence. What I'm about to say to you, you can bank on, you can count on. This is absolute truth, and I know it to be true because I've seen it in my own life. So David is saying, pay attention to what I'm saying because this is absolutely true and you can count on it. And then when he talks about goodness and mercy, he says, these things will follow me all the days of my life. They will be a part of my life for the rest of my life. So what's he talking about here? What does this word mercy mean? Here's the first thing it means. First of all, this word mercy means relationship. That's the foundation of the meaning of this word that we translate mercy. It means relationship. It's the picture of two people who are in a relationship where they're committed to each other. So when you put that in this verse, what David is saying is, surely this relationship with God that I have, it will follow me for the rest of my life. It will be a part of my life for the rest of my life. And that's important to know. Because there are times when I mess up. But God still pursues me because this relationship follows me the rest of my life. There are times when I make mistakes. There are times when I feel as though I'm completely alone, when I feel like God has abandoned me. But I have the assurance that this relationship with Him is with me, that God is with me even when I'm not aware of His presence. There are times when I neglect Him, when I turn away from Him, when I have the wrong priorities and I push God aside. Even then, He pursues me. This relationship still is a part of my life because God does not give up on me. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. This relationship with the God who created all things, that relationship, it's never ending. And He continues to walk with me through life no matter what I face and no matter what I do, no matter what's happening in my life, He does not give up on me. God is committed to this relationship that we share. That's what that word mercy tells us. But it's more than that. Not only does it mean relationship, it also describes a relationship where one person rescues another person. It's the picture of that relationship where I'm in trouble, I'm in a bad situation, and you come and you have my back. It's that dependable person that you know you can count on when things are working against you. When you're outnumbered, you know that person is going to be there for you. When the odds are stacked against you, when you have no way of escape, when you feel like there's nothing you can do and you're in deep, deep trouble, it's that one friend that you know you can count on and they will be there for you. That's what this word mercy also means. And David is saying, you know what? I've been there many times. I've been in some bad situations, and I am a living testament that God's mercy still follows me. He is my rescuer. He always has been, and I am a living example that God comes and He is with me even in those times of trouble. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. So that word mercy, it means relationship with God that never ends. It means that God is our rescuer no matter what. But it also means more than that. It also means after this person has rescued you, they provide for you. They take care of you. It's that person that comes and rescues you, and then they make sure that whatever happened to you doesn't happen again. They make sure that they are there with you to provide for you, to protect you from now on. It's the story of the Good Samaritan who, when he saw a man who was beaten and left for dead by the side of the road, risked his own life to stop and to rescue that man. But he went further than that. He took him to a place where he knew that his needs would be met, and he paid for all of it. He took care of all of it. And he paid extra to make sure if there are any other needs that come up, it's covered. And I'm going to check back and I'm going to make sure that all of your needs are provided for. I will take care of you from here on out. That's what that word mercy means, that after God has rescued us, He will continue to take care of us. It's His provision and protection now and forevermore. It describes for us that He is the God who is not just there in case of emergencies. He's there with us after the emergency is over and we're still trying to pick up the pieces and reorganize our lives and bring things back together. God is still there with us in those times. That He's not only the one who rescues us, He's the one who restores us. He's not only the one who forgives us, He's the one who renews us and gives life back to us. That's who God is. And David says, this relationship with God, the God who knows me and who loves me, who rescues me, who provides for me, who renews me, this relationship with Him, it continues and it will not end for the rest of my life. God and I will be together all the days of my life. And when I get into situations that are desperate and I can't save myself, He will pursue me and He will rescue me with the same love that moved Him to send His Son to die on a cross to redeem me and to give me new life. He will walk with me. He will rescue me. He will provide for me and He will protect me. How amazing is the love of our God. And David says that mercy, that relationship, it will follow me. It will be my experience. It will be a part of my life for the rest of my life. And then when my time on this earth is over, I get to go to His home. He says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is one of the very few references in the Old Testament to heaven. There's not a whole lot revealed to us in the Old Testament about what heaven is like. But under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, David tells us here that it is the house of the Lord. And for those who are his followers, it is a place where we will be with him forever. I want to ask you just to close your eyes for a few moments. I want to read to you a few verses from the book of Revelation. John, who was a follower of Jesus, is given a revelation from Jesus, and he writes it down in this book that we call Revelation. And a part of what was revealed to him is what heaven is like. And I'm going to read just a part of what he describes. Just picture this in your mind as I read these words. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the old heaven and the old earth had disappeared. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them and they will be his people. God himself will be with them and he will wipe every tear from their eyes and there will be no more death, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more pain. All these things will be gone forever. And the one sitting on the throne said, look, I'm making everything new. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To all who are thirsty, I will give freely from the springs of the water of life. You want hope when life is hard? God's promise to us is that he is our shepherd. He's our shepherd who walks with us through the dark times. He's our shepherd who protects us from our enemy and corrects us when we wander away from him. He's our shepherd who builds a relationship with us where he loves us unconditionally. He is our shepherd who rescues us and restores us and pursues us because he loves us. And then when it's all over, and that day comes that we breathe our last and this life ends, he invites us to his home to live with him forever. How amazing is the love of our God.